Have you ever avoided going to the doctor? Even when you know that whatever's wrong with you is not going to get better on its own, and that you're going to wind up at the doctor's eventually, still for a day or two, or sometimes three, you'll push it off and you'll think, maybe this will just magically be fixed when I wake up, and I won't have to go. I think one of the reasons we do that is because actually finally going to the person who can help us is admitting that we have something that we can't control ourselves. That we have a need that's larger than our own ability to manage it, to satisfy it, to get what we need. We have to look to someone else. We have to admit that we're not fully in control. And that's scary, and so we avoid it. In today's gospel, we hear about a woman afflicted with hemorrhages for 12 years who is already far past that fear. She's already been to the doctors, all the doctors apparently, and spent everything she has. And so she can be so in touch with her need that she is able to approach Jesus and to seek his help even if he doesn't know about it. To reach out for what she needs. Because she's given up the illusion that she's going to be able to manage it herself. Sometimes that clarity comes more abruptly, as it must have come for Jairus and his wife when their daughter was in peril. That they immediately went out looking for the one who could help them, reaching out to Jesus in their need. But of course, this gospel is not just about where we stand in need. This gospel is also about how Jesus responds. Both the first reading and the gospel make it clear that God, that Jesus, is entirely on the side of life. That God always acts to heal. That Jesus reaches out to restore us to wholeness, to lift us up again to life. And so we're invited to have confidence in approaching Jesus, that Jesus' will is for life and for healing and for wholeness. And yet still, oftentimes, we're scared to give up that illusion of control. That idolatry of control can be so strong in us that we actually need crisis to break through it. That we need crisis to help us move beyond that to actually calling on Jesus for the help we need. As I've been praying about these readings, I couldn't help but think that there have been, in the life of the church, two pretty significant crisis moments recently, or at least moments that have been where we've been forced to acknowledge the crisis. One, of course, is this past Friday's Supreme Court ruling, where we have to grapple with the fact that we're torn between, on the one hand, many people we love and us ourselves oftentimes feeling extraordinary joy at the expansion of civil rights, and yet also this tension of how do we hold that together with trying to think with the church? What do we do with the fact that we have to admit now that the church's story about marriage is no longer the controlling narrative in our society? How do we live with that into the future? The second moment of crisis, even though it kind of got starved for media oxygen in these last couple weeks, is the Pope's encyclical on the environment, where he calls us to acknowledge the fact that our planet is also in crisis, that global warming is an issue that we have kicked the can down the road just about as far as we can, and we're going to have to deal with it. But he also calls on those of us in the developed world, those of us who enjoy material abundance and great material resources, to recognize that we have a disproportionate share of the responsibility here. That we have to look at what we can do, what we can change, the way that we're demanded to adjust our lives in order to support the needs of those in the developing world, those in the global south, who are bearing the brunt of the costs of climate change. And this, too, I think, is a kind of crisis, because we'd prefer to say, well, we'll tinker around the edges, we'll pass some new policies, but my own life is going to look pretty much the same. And we're being challenged to say, maybe not. What I think these two moments of crisis have in common is that they put us in tension between, on the one hand, particularly with the question of climate change, our abundance and another's need. And perhaps even with the Supreme Court decision, they put us in tension between what feels like an abundance of joy on the one hand and a sort of peril of dismay on the other, when we look at what position does the church now occupy in society. And there, I think we turn to the second reading, where Paul speaks to the Corinthians. And Paul talks to them about how their abundance and another's need are supposed to be related. He calls for them in generosity out of their abundance to supply the needs of those brothers and sisters in other Christian churches less fortunate than them. But what's important, I think, for us to recognize is that Paul's logic is not just egalitarianism writ large. It's not just equality because equality is good on its own. Paul's logic, writing to the Corinthians, is as Christ Jesus, who was rich, has become poor for your sake, so that you might become rich, so should you be generous with those in need. Paul's logic is not egalitarianism. Paul's logic is incarnation. Paul's logic is that our generosity, our way of dealing with our own abundance, should be modeled on the way that Christ gave himself, poured himself out into the world to become equal with us, to unify his life to ours. That's the generosity we're called on to model. That's also, I think, the way we're called on to occupy our own need, to occupy our own lack of control and our own fear, to be open to the ones who come to us in love, ready to pour themselves out, ready to enter into our lives and our space. And that's a very different way to think about what it means to not be in control anymore, to think about what it means to stand in need. If the abundance of God himself is being poured out for us through the incarnation, if we are likewise being called out to pour out from our abundance, and make no mistake, sitting here in Georgetown, we have more material abundance than almost anywhere else in the entire world. But we're being called to give it out of love. Not as if there's some kind of zero-sum game where you can only have this much in order to balance the scales with someone else. But the way Christ gives, the way Christ pours himself out of the fullness, the infinity of God's love, to give us everything that we need. Now, if we had to try to do that ourselves, if we had to try to, by sheer force of will, or virtue, or something like that, meet the needs that are presented to us, that'd be hopeless. I certainly don't have that kind of strength or power on my own. What we do have is the ability to reach out and touch the hem of his garment. What we do have is the ability, from our own need, from our own places of fear and lack of control, to look to Jesus and say, you have the power and you have the desire to include us in your love. That's what we celebrate when we come together to share the Eucharist. That's what is broken open and poured out for us in the body and blood of Christ. That's what's shared with us as we receive communion. And that is the hope with which we're sent out into the world. Not that somehow we are enough on our own, but that our need has been satisfied by Christ's own abundance. And that we are to share that same love, pouring ourselves out for others, sharing their joy and their grief, sharing their need as well, giving whatever we can, not by our own strength, but in the image of Christ, who poured himself out for us.